Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. This episode is another solo episode, just the two of us and you guys. We're going to talk about Lebanon and what's going on over there, giving you a little bit of history, yeah, what's been going on post this deadly explosion that happened at the beginning of the month. And then we're going to talk about Black Lives Matter. And we end the episode reading some really nice reviews and having a heart-to-heart with all of you.
Yeah. And the Black Lives Matter, we're going to talk about the murder of Anthony McClain in Pasadena this past week.
Yeah, so stay tuned. Don't go anywhere.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born?
We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
What a time to be alive.
Truly, what a time. We are blessing you with two solo episodes in the span of a couple weeks because, as you know, a lot of stuff is going down. And so today it's just the two of us.
Mm-hmm. It's just us, and we're talking about something that recently happened that we think is important to kind of break down and also give resources about. And that is the explosion that just happened in Beirut, Lebanon.
Yeah. On August 4th, 2020, a couple weeks ago, two explosions occurred at the port of the city of Beirut, the capital of Lebanon. The second of the two explosions was extremely powerful, and it caused 171 deaths, 6,000 injuries, and in U.S. dollar amounts, $10 to $15 billion of property damage. And it left an estimated 300,000 people homeless. The event was linked to about 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate. It had been confiscated by the Lebanese government from an abandoned ship called MV Rosas, and it was stored in the port without proper safety measures for 6 years. And this is what eventually caused the explosion.
Yeah, so the explosion was detected by the U.S. Geological Survey as a seismic event of magnitude 3.3. It was felt in Syria, Turkey, Israel, and parts of Europe, and it was heard in Cyprus, more than 160 miles away, and it is considered to be one of the most powerful non-nuclear explosions in history.
Oof. Yeah. There are some images that show the explosion, what it looks like if it would have happened in New York or happened in LA. It's a huge amount of space that it took out completely. It's devastating. But the Lebanese government declared a 2-week state of emergency in response to this disaster. And in the aftermath, protests erupted across Lebanon against the government for their failure to prevent the explosions. And we've discussed these in the past, but there's been larger series of protests going on in Lebanon that have been taking place in the country since 2019. And on August 10th, 2020, the Prime Minister, Hassan Diab, and the Lebanese cabinet resigned due to the mounting political pressure that was exacerbated by this event. And we're going to break down all of this in detail and give you a deep dive into this crisis.
Yes. So we're just going to break it down little by little to give you guys a sense of what's going on and some background. And if you want more background on the original protests that were happening last year in October 2019, we have an episode called We Are Lebanon that you can go back and listen to provide more context to why things have really been building up and how this explosion was truly like the last straw for the Lebanese people. So the blast came at a very difficult time for Lebanon, which was not only trying to curb the spread of coronavirus. That's the other thing. We're in a global pandemic while this happened. But it also was in the midst of like an unprecedented economic crisis. So the economic situation has pushed tens of thousands of people in poverty and triggered large anti-government protests.
And the government has since resigned. And you're asking yourself, why did they resign after all this time? They announced the move 2 Mondays ago. The Prime Minister, Hassan Diab, he said his government was, quote, taking a step back to stand with the people in order to wage the battle of change with them. And as we said, discontent has been brewing in Lebanon for years. In the later half of 2019, a plan to tax WhatsApp calls spilled over into mass protests against economic turmoil and corruption, which eventually led to the government's resignation. And this happened back then as well. The government back then also resigned. We're going to get into how convoluted their government is because it's genuinely a clusterfuck of ministers and fucking like congressmen and all this bullshit.
Yeah. And so coronavirus really curbed the protests, but the financial situation continued to worsen. And a few weeks ago's deadly explosion was seen by many as a deadly result of years of corruption and mismanagement. So people have taken to the streets again, and there have been clashes between protesters and police, and the government's plans to investigate the cause of the explosion were not enough for most people, who have basically lost all faith in the political elite. And before the cabinet's resignation, a number of ministers had offered to step down.
But the end of this government does not necessarily mean an end to the anger, because again, this happened last year, and last year's protests, they led to a formation of the government, which has now been forced to step down over the same accusations of corruption. So truly nothing has changed.
That's never ending. In his strongly worded speech, August 10th, Mr. Diab blamed a system of corruption deeply rooted in all the functions of the state. He goes on to say, one of the many examples of corruption exploded in the port of Beirut, and the calamity befell Lebanon, he said. But corruption cases are widespread in the country's political and administrative landscape, after other calamities hiding in many mines and warehouses, and which pose a great threat, are protected by the class that controls the faith of the country. That is so daunting.
It really is. So let's talk about the economy, because this is a huge reason why there was so much political unrest in Lebanon. What went wrong with the economy? Even before coronavirus, this whole pandemic happened at the start of this year, Lebanon seemed to be headed for a huge economic crash. Its public debt to gross domestic product, basically what a country owes compared to what it produces, it was the third highest in the entire world. The unemployment rate stood at 25%. And nearly a third of the population was living below the poverty line. Also, just a quick little, I think I've talked about this on a podcast before, but the movie Capernaum, which came out the end of last year by Lebanese filmmaker Nadine Lebeki, it follows the life of a Syrian refugee in Lebanon. And it's a really heartbreaking insight into the poverty crisis in Lebanon, because a huge part of that was impacted by refugees, because they took so many of them in, which is an amazing thing. But that film really shines a light on the poverty that people are living in, that children are living in, that orphans are living in, and refugees are living in without proper ways to survive. So if you want a real on-the-ground look, it's an amazing film, Capernaum. Anyway, little plug.
So late last year also saw the unraveling of what analysts said was effectively a state-sponsored pyramid or Ponzi scheme run by the central bank, which was borrowing from commercial banks at above-market interest rates to pay back its debts and maintain the Lebanese pound's fixed exchange rate with the U.S. dollar. At the same time, people were getting increasingly angry and frustrated about the government's failure to provide even basic services. They were having to deal with daily power cuts, a lack of safe drinking water, limited public health care, and some of the world's worst internet connections. And many people blamed the ruling elite, who have dominated politics for years and amassed their own wealth while failing to carry out the sweeping reforms necessary to solve all the country's problems.
I mean, they have a point, because they've been protesting and nothing has been changing. So the corrupt people at large are the ones to blame. So the protests have escalated. At the start of October 2019, which we covered last year, a shortage of foreign currency led to the Lebanese pound losing value against the dollar on a newly emerged black market for the first time in two decades. When importers of wheat and fuel demanded to be paid in dollars, unions called strikes. And again, our episode, We Are Lebanon, goes more into this and these protests in detail. And then unprecedented wildfires in the country's western mountains highlighted how underfunded and under-equipped the fire service was as well.
We are in such an aggressive downward spiral with climate change that, like, wildfires are just running rampant all over the world. Like, California, where we're in Southern California, we had a wildfire all throughout the weekend. Like, the heat is out of control. It's getting so hot.
And it's not just the fire that makes damage. It's the smoke in the air. Yeah. Like, it impacts so many things. And it's literally the world's on fire, not just a metaphor anymore. It's literally on fire at this point.
Well, that's the thing. There's so much going on. And it's like, when countries and governments are run poorly due to greed and, like, basic, like, authoritarian, like, low-key trying to hide the fact that they're authoritarian governments, but, like, clearly are, like, this is where the world, like, we are hitting our stride in, like, shit governments, shit management, just like the elite getting what they want and everyone else having to suffer. So
so this is the breaking point, essentially.
Yeah, so in mid-October last year, the government proposed new taxes on tobacco, petrol, and voice calls via messaging service apps such as WhatsApp to drum up more revenue, but backlash forced them to cancel their plans. However, the debacle unleashed a surge of discontent that had been simmering in Lebanon for years. Tens of thousands of Lebanese took to the street, leading to the resignation of the Western-backed Prime Minister Saad Hariri and his unity government. And if you guys don't recall, Saad Hariri is the same guy who said, "What happens in Saudi Arabia stays in Saudi Arabia, never forget."
So he's a great guy, essentially. I'm kidding. He is terrifying. But these protests, they cut across sectarian lines, which is a rare phenomenon since the country's devastating 1975 to 1989 civil war ended, and this brought the country to a virtual standstill. The newly appointed Prime Minister Hassan Diab, at the time, he announced that Lebanon would default on its foreign debt for the first time in history, saying its foreign currency reserves had hit, quote, a critical and dangerous level, and that those remaining were needed to pay for its vital imports.
Yikes.
But how has this pandemic made matters worse? So in the wake of COVID-19, there was a surge of infections and a lockdown was imposed in mid-March to curb the spread of the disease. On the one hand, it forced anti-government protesters off the streets, but on the other, it made the economic crisis much worse and it exposed the inadequacies of Lebanon's social welfare system.
Yeah, so many businesses were forced to lay off staff or put them on furlough without pay. The gap between the Lebanese pound's value on the official and black market exchange rates widened, and the banks tightened capital controls. As prices rose further, many families were unable to buy even basic necessities, and the growing economic hardship triggered fresh unrest. In April, a young man was shot dead by soldiers during a violent protest in Tripoli, and several banks were set ablaze. And the government, meanwhile, finally approved a recovery plan that it hoped would end the economic crisis and win support from the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, for a bailout package worth $10 billion. And by the time the coronavirus restrictions began to be lifted in May, the prices of some foodstuffs had doubled and Mr. Diab warned that Lebanon was at risk of a major food crisis. This is what he said in the Washington Post. Many Lebanese have already stopped buying meat, fruits, and vegetables and may soon find it difficult to even afford bread.
Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. So why is their government struggling to do anything about this crisis? Most analysts point to one key factor, political sectarianism, or groups looking after their own interests. This is how the government over there is formed. It's very convoluted. Lebanon officially recognizes 18 religious communities, 4 Muslim, 12 Christian, the Druze sect, and Judaism. The 3 main political offices, president, speaker of parliament, and the prime minister, they're divided among the 3 biggest communities, which are the Maronite Christians, Shia Muslims, and the Sunni Muslims, respectively. So the president is Maronite Christian, the speaker of parliament is Shia Muslim, and the prime minister is Sunni Muslim. And this has been under an agreement dating back to 1943. And then parliament's 128 seats are also divided evenly between Christians and Muslims, including the Druze. And I feel like back in 1943, they made this plan to be more inclusive and to make sure everyone was looked after and accounted for. But what it leads to is a lot of just clusterfuck of ideas and opinions and people, again, only trying to look after themselves. And it is in this religious diversity that it makes the country an easy target for interference by external powers, as seen with Iran's backing of the Shia Hezbollah movement. And Hezbollah is widely seen as the most powerful military and political group in all of Lebanon. I was talking about this with my mom, and she was saying that the Lebanese military, they are afraid and they obey the Shia Hezbollah movement. Like, that's how powerful this force is over there. Even though it's not as technically a military force, like a governmental military force over there, they're the most powerful things. Like, they're the most powerful people with the weapons and everything. They have the control because they're feared.
Yeah. So since the end of the Civil War, political leaders from each sect have maintained their power and influence through a system of patronage networks. They're protecting the interests of the religious communities they represent and offering both legal and illegal financial incentives. Lebanon ranked 137th out of 180 countries, 180 being the worst, on Transparency International's 2019 Corruption Perceptions Index. The watchdog says corruption permeates all levels of society in Lebanon, with political parties, parliament, and police perceived as the most corrupt institutions of the country. It's a very easy system of sectarian power sharing, which is fueling these patronage networks and hindering Lebanon's system of governance. Should we take a quick break and come back and talk about Lebanese parliament?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, we'll be right back.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we're back. Okay, we're going to jump in to what's going on with Lebanese parliament and what it recently did last week. It approved sweeping powers for the army. They had cited exceptional circumstances in the country following a massive explosion in Beirut on August 4th. So the state of emergency was declared by the cabinet on August 5th, the day after the explosion, which again left at least 200 dead and 6,000 injured. And the state of emergency allows the army to curb free speech, freedom of assembly, and the freedom of the press, as well as to enter homes and arrest anyone deemed a security threat.
Wow. Judicial proceedings are to take place in the country's military courts, which Human Rights Watch and other rights groups have shown to not conform to standards on due process. Rights groups have raised serious concerns about the state of emergency, saying it would enable security forces to crack down on public raging with anger against the ruling class following the blast. The huge explosion, like we said before, one of the biggest non-nuclear blasts in history, was fueled by 2,750 tons of dangerous chemicals left in storage at Beirut's port for nearly 7 years, with the knowledge of top security and political officials who chose not to do anything or chose not to have any regulation or have anyone check it out and be like, is this safe? They chose to just ignore it. They chose to put the problem away and hope nothing would come of it, which is how a lot of corrupt governments work, is don't worry, just push it out of people's minds and hopefully they'll forget. It's like classic gaslighting. Like they, and I hate to, you know, gaslighting is kind of a, what leads to an explosion. So I probably shouldn't even like say it that way, but like, it's manipulation by the government that they tried to truly hide from the people. And now look how it turned out. They've destroyed Beirut because of it.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, the gaslighting double meaning is crazy. Second of all, yeah, it's classic, like out of sight, out of mind. If the people aren't seeing it or paying attention, let's just keep functioning as corrupt fucking people. It's infuriating. But one of the members of parliament, Osama Saad, he cited the militarization of the state, and he was the only one out of the 119 member chamber that was critical of this move. And the chamber is a reduced number because after the resignation of the 9 prime ministers since the explosion, there's less people in parliament to oppose the state of emergency, which doesn't make sense to have people resign and then not being able to have as many people oppose the state of emergency kind of thing. I don't know. It's just, again, it's all a clusterfuck over there. I don't know how they fucking have a government. But the parliament speaker, Naba Berri, responded that the army had, quote, not taken steps that people fear, nor suppressed television channels. And despite the chaos in the media, it did not intervene or leave room for protest. This is according to local media. Sessions are not televised, and therefore statements by lawmakers are carried on by local media.
This is a mess. But the Lebanese army, the internal security forces, and armed plainclothes officers were observed using excessive force against anti-establishment protesters on 2 Saturdays ago. Some 728 people were injured, many left with serious wounds that required emergency surgery, and about 12 journalists were also assaulted, including at least 4 who were assaulted by soldiers, one of whom was an Al Jazeera reporter. So the state of emergency is set to run until August 21st, but it can be renewed. Karim Namour, a member of legal NGO Legal Agenda, it's a legal NGO, but it's also called Legal Agenda, they told Al Jazeera the state of emergency was entirely unnecessary to address the aftermath of the Beirut blast, given that the country had already been in a state of general mobilization because of the coronavirus pandemic. Namour goes on to say, this general mobilization already allows cabinet the powers to mobilize the armed forces and to control stores in the matters of a strategic nature, including controlling the prices of things like glass and wood. as well as to raise the rubble and provide relief to people. The only reason we can see for the state of emergency is to grant security forces powers to control the streets as much as possible, to give legal coverage to things that would be otherwise impossible. The ruling regime knows that it is weak and unpopular on the streets, and they are afraid because the fingers are pointed at them and there are calls for revenge, as there should be.
Yeah, it's just a lot. And I found this article on Al Jazeera. I want to talk about the experience that people are having in Lebanon themselves and the trauma that this devastation is incurring in Lebanese people, because it's a lot of fucking trauma. They've already been through a lot. I mean, I pulled snippets of this article, but I encourage you to read it again. All the resources are in our footnotes, but it's just a lot to live through. And a lot of these people already lived through a lot. And there are also, again, a lot of refugees there that have also lived through a lot in other countries. So again, last October, the worst wildfires in decades were swiftly followed by an unprecedented uprising demanding an overhaul of the political system. Back then, the country's deepest ever economic crisis, it impoverished thousands. And then we were hit with the coronavirus. Sabine Salame, she's 17, she's a freelance writer. This is her speaking now. And now this, we're constantly trying to put our lives back together and then something else happens. You feel that there is no place for you to put your feet on the ground. There's nowhere safe. We didn't feel safe on the street, and then the revolution gave them back to us. We conquered the corner, then the square. Then Corona showed us that safety is only inside our home. And then this broke everything. Our home isn't even safe anymore.
Oh, that's true. Ghaliya Alawani, a Syrian writer based in Beirut, had just opened her balcony door facing the port when the sky turned gray and an airborne tsunami rolled over her home. All the memories are compounded by the fact, like many Lebanese, Alawani has little confidence that the local investigation into the explosion will bring any justice for the victims. She says, "We are waste people in a wasteland. I've always felt through my experience with Syria that Arabs are so expendable. Maybe people here felt a bit more special because of the hip bars and life and art, but we are all waste people who die and it doesn't matter." And then she goes on to say, and she winces at the sound of a loud thud, but she carries on, "It's not normal that we can't find joy in silly things like the latest TikTok trend because we've literally seen death. I don't want to be an Arab survivor victim for life, but I am. It's done."
Yeah. There's one more thing in the article that I thought was interesting. Basically, the explosion was so fierce that psychologists trained to help victims of war and torture have been deployed to the streets, and they've been going door to door to provide emergency mental health care. Joelle Wehbi, a clinical psychologist at the Restart Center, specialized in rehabilitating victims of war. She was speaking from a tent set up at the Mar Mikhail neighborhood. She says, "Right now, we can talk about acute stress, people scared, fearing it may happen again, and lots of anger. We're seeing so much anger." She urges survivors to speak about what they saw, heard, and felt rather than push it down, which would only amplify the symptoms.
And here's one more person's account, what they experienced. Mohammed Soliman, who's 27, says he was watching Netflix and drinking green tea when the explosion threw him and his dog into a wall of his house. Shell-shocked, he walked through the street past dead people. One, he recalls, was bloodless but propped up against a wall like the soul was knocked out of him. He pushed on to his neighbor's house. She was stuck on the fifth floor, blinded by shards of glass. Soliman climbed stairs strewn with debris and cleaned her bloodied face. One of her eyes was split open. He says he told her it was dust and shudders at the memory.
He lost everything in the explosion: his apartment, the bar he owns, and a popular restaurant that he had stakes in. People he knew, the chef at a local sandwich place, the waiter at a pub, Rowan, who was a 19-year-old waitress, they all died in the blast. He says, "What's next? I don't know. I get up and try to do something useful so I don't have to think. Give me boxes to carry or bottles to move." And he shakes his head. "I can't make any life decisions or think about the future when my whole community is gone." So I just wanted to make sure we could talk about the real life trauma that happens. It's really easy to see statistics of a place that's far away and be like, oh, this many people died. This many people are injured in hospitals. Again, hospitals that are overrun already with COVID, they're just not able to take all these injured people in. So I encourage you to look up on the ground reporting. There is a lot of reporting being done with Lebanese doctors, people that work in hospitals. It's a human issue. Just make sure you remember this is a human thing, and grounding it in these experiences is important, because you can look at this guy who survived and be like, oh, you made it, you survived. But the reality is, this is lifelong trauma. He'll never be the same. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot here. This impacts people for generations to come.
Yeah, it does. Wow. I hope that kind of gave you guys some context as to what has happened. Please check our footnotes. I've compiled all the donation links I could find to put in there so you can go through and find what you'd like to donate to. There's a lot of them. And yes, all these donation links, except for Red Cross, I don't know exactly how the Red Cross one works. They go to the people. They're not going to the government. So don't worry, it won't go to a corrupt government where the money will never see the people. I know after all that, to be like, give your money to Lebanon sounds kind of like, no. But yes, all these people have connections. They're either in Lebanon, they're either nonprofit groups working on the streets in Lebanon, or they have a connection to a person in Lebanon where they can give this money to. So it will go to the people.
Yeah. If you're able to give a little bit of money, look at the resources below. There's a lot of places to donate, and we've got to rally together because, again, a human issue. Okay, we're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to talk about one more important issue, and then we'll read some reviews and nice things that you guys have told us that help us keep doing the show mentally. So yeah, don't go anywhere.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, we're back. If you live in the U.S., you are fully aware. I mean, it's global at this point, but Black Lives Matter is still very much going on. We have not given up. There are so many things that we're still protesting, and people are still dying, including Anthony McLean, who died in Pasadena. This happened a couple days ago on Saturday, August 15th. He was shot in the back, and he was killed by Pasadena Police Department officers. And that same night, someone else was arrested and young children were assaulted by police, including being tasered and maced. but he was literally riding a car, which was stopped by Pasadena PD for a, quote, violation of a vehicle code. Like, they had no, like, why are, first of all, why are armed officers even responding to this kind of thing? Why does a vehicle code violation require anything more than a fucking mailed letter, which is, yes, USPS is a whole other issue we'll get into eventually, but they had no right and no reason. They never have a reason to kill anybody, but this, he was an innocent man. Even just, like, just knowing just shot in the back, you know, there, it's just, that's murder. That's straight up murder. It's absurd that this keeps happening over and over, despite all of these protests. Like, you would think that they would have restraint at this point, but they don't. So I needed to bring it up because I'm so mad.
They say he was pulling a firearm from his waistband, but I don't know how much evidence of that exists because witnesses said he was just running away from them. And they say he threw his firearm in the streets and ran. Regardless of what's the truth, if he threw his firearm and they saw him throw his firearm, why would they still shoot him?
In the back.
Yeah, like, in the back.
He wasn't coming at them. He wasn't pointing anything at them. Like, this is just murder.
Just,
it's not self-defense.
Down.
Yeah.
It's like these police think, I will kill. I don't know. I mean, there's so much to break down here.
Yeah. I mean, even just the way it's being reported, like, I just pulled up a CBS local article and the headline is infuriating. It just says authorities investigate officer involved deadly shooting. It's a murder. They murdered him.
Yeah.
And he was a father of three, which is heartbreaking. He is 32 years old and he's just young, he's just so young. And he just, I don't know. Again, not anyone, any type of person, any age, any kind of family circumstance, this is still a murder. But there's something incredibly heartbreaking about leaving behind three children. A family friend, Colina Winbush, she said, the guy's got a son. He's got cousins, uncles, everybody that loves him, a community. Look at the community that came out for Anthony. She said this at the vigil that happened the day after he was murdered on Sunday the 16th. And there was a video that was taken after the shooting that showed McClain on the ground in handcuffs with an officer appearing to be on his back. And this video, again, caused outrage and raised questions about how he was treated even after he was shot. Again, this is in fucking Pasadena, California. It's a blue place, and it's
right,
not.
But a lot of rich white people, unfortunately. The department spokesman, Lieutenant William Grisafe, he said an investigation into the shooting is underway, and the police chief has made a commitment to get the video of the body cam available sooner than later. And he said it could be within days or it could take a couple weeks. So I hope they release that body cam footage so we can know the truth, because as we have learned in the past, investigations by the police into police matters rarely reveal the truth.
Yeah. Police investigating themselves. Like, come on. Like, they're not gonna, it's just a fucking scam. It's all a scam. But this is just basically a reminder to you all that Black Lives Matter is still very much is a thing. Black lives still matter. They'll always matter. If your feeds are going back to normal, if people are posting selfies, if people are doing whatever, just follow the right people. Follow more Black people. Follow people that have their ear to the ground. Robert Evans, who lives in Portland, he's on Twitter constantly reporting. Portland is still fucking on fire right now. Like, metaphorically, I have to say that because everything else is literally on fire. But there's protests in Chicago that are getting extremely violent right now. Like, people are still out on the streets. So just keep yourself informed. We're not over it. Just because someone's bored of COVID doesn't mean it's gone. Just because someone is tired of seeing posts about Black Lives Matter does not mean we're done talking about it. So keep that in your headspace is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the work is not done. I mean, a lot of people have been saying that their timelines are back to normal. No one is posting about things that matter when it comes to Black Lives Matter. And to that, I say you need to follow more Black people and more activists and more people of mm-hmm. color who are doing the work. Because if you follow all your same people, you're not going to see anything different. Because it's very easy for people to treat something like a trend and move on. And it's kind of been a problem. I've been reading that, like, a bunch of, like, companies or, I don't know, businesses reached out to Black creators and then basically ghosted them after it wasn't a trend. And you shouldn't do that if you're going to commit to hiring Black people or people of color, creators or anything in your work. You need to like stick with it. Like, it's not a trend. Yeah. These people's lives matter. You can't just decide, well, no one else is writing about it, so I guess I'm in the clear to go back to only working with white people. Like, it's really disturbing.
It's really disturbing. And this is a whole different tangent for a much deeper dive. But recently, Biden announced his running mate was Kamala Harris. And obviously, there are issues, and neither of them were my first choice or even my fucking fifth choice. But there's an argument that's like, we have to vote for the lesser of the two evils. And that's definitely the case here again, because that's what Black people have been having to do their entire fucking lives. Like, yeah, they never really had a great advocate to begin with.
All elections have been that way. It's always been like, no politician are you gonna, you know, very few Bernie Sanders or AOC types have existed in our day.
Yeah. But the point is, you have people that have just gotten reelected, like the Squad. If you've been following
Ilhan and AOC. Yeah, Ilhan and Omar. Ayana.
And Rashida Tlaib. I think those people can bring up their own, like, more people like them if we have someone like Biden versus Trump in office. Like, you're not just voting for Biden. You're voting for the next person to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Like, she's not going to live forever. She's been hospitalized like 20 times in the past month. Like, we have to think about that. So I really encourage anyone who's jaded by voting to get their fucking head out of the fucking sand. I have no patience for that kind of mentality anymore, and neither should you, because this is bigger than you and your pride and your moral dilemma. Because yes, he's not a great person. Biden has his problems, but Trump is literally destroying this country. Like, if you haven't figured that out at this point, 4 years ago, people were like, what's the worst that can happen? Literally this. Literally the world's on fire. He doesn't believe in climate change. He doesn't believe that Black people even matter. Like, we have to wake up. And
he's going to kill our postal service. He's going to kill our mail.
Yeah, exactly. Like there are things that I didn't even think I would have to worry about ever.
Yeah.
That I'm worrying. Like who would have thought that I would stress about buying stamps? Like, what the hell? Like that's what Trump has done. And I will never forgive anyone for still supporting him. At this juncture, they are racist and they are bigoted. And as much as, like, maybe that's close-minded to shut them out completely, all we can do is keep going, and hopefully they'll see the light one day.
Doubtful.
Doubtful. I am very terrified of the legion of fans he has, regardless if he wins or loses. Like, they terrify me. They terrify me more than Trump terrifies me. Pence is terrifying to me because he looks like his soul was stolen from the devil. But his legions of followers are what really unsettle me, because they see literally red. I don't get it. And this goes back to those videos you see of people like being outright racist. The fact that the American flag being posted somewhere is now just an indication of a bigoted like symbol.
Yeah, it's a threat.
That's what Trump has done. Trump did that, and he needs to go.
He's made it a threat.
Yeah.
What other country's flag is a threat to their people than in America? And I think that speaks volumes. And
it really does.
It's disturbing.
The one instance I can think of about a flag might be Syria, only because the revolution took out one of the stars when it happened years ago. But even then, the sight of the flag didn't make people like repulsed like the American flag does. Like, the American flag now has this weight to it that is just disappointing. It's just so disappointing. It's time for Trump to go. And if all of you witches out there were conjuring up a spell to kill him and instead killed his brother, be more specific next time. Do the full name. Do Robert or fucking Donald Trump. Because does that make sense? It was a joke. As much as it was fun to say Trump died, it wasn't the right Trump. Is that too dark? I don't know. Do you want to read some reviews?
Sure. Turn it around a little.
Okay. We've gotten so many nice reviews from you guys. We've gotten really nice comments. We try to read all of them. We've gotten such nice emails. We got a really nice email that was, we didn't get the chance to respond to it, but Jill from Montreal, I want you to know, if you're listening to this, we read your email. Every time we get an email that's nice, the person that saw it first will text the other person being like, we got a nice email. And it just, it makes us so happy. So thank you so much for sending it. And yeah, we also got an email from Sahar. Thank you so much for sending your story. And thank you for listening to the podcast. We're so happy that you can connect with us in our rambles, essentially. So, okay. This is the most recent one, August 12th. The username is Swars Seawalker. The heading says, so grateful for this podcast. 5 stars, of course. The review says, as a Kurdish American, I've had barely any Middle Eastern voices with prominent platforms to look up to. Shireen and Anna are amazing Middle Eastern North African podcasters, MENA, who have had an incredible array of discussions and guests on all the various important topics in the world. Subscribe now to this amazing podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you. Short and sweet and so, so nice to read.
Thank you. Swars Seawalker?
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool name.
Yeah.
We got one from Senor Sasquatch on August 3rd, 2020. It's just a shaka hang loose. They wrote, Anna and Shireen are dope and their perspectives are cool. And the show and the other pods, and this show and the other pods the guest on are pretty funny. I like them. Thank you.
A little choppy, but very nice. Still 5 stars. Thank you. Not you weren't choppy. The review is choppy. Anna was reading it verbatim. That's just how it sounded. But it doesn't matter. It's still 5 stars and it still means a lot. NerdTac said on August 2nd, the heading is finally listened. And although it's annoying that you were late, it's better late than never. So thank you, NerdTac. They go on to say, I'm surprised it took me so long to start listening to this podcast. I had heard both the hosts on other shows and thought they were smart and funny. Thank you. I had just started listening this week and I'm hooked. Their episode with Alfred Molina might be one of the best podcast episodes ever recorded. I can't wait to dig into the rest of the back catalog.
Well, that's so
nice. That's so
nice.
That
was a pretty fun episode to record. Do you remember we pitched him a movie?
Yep. That was maybe one of my top five episodes ever in my life.
What was his dream role? That he's just in a hospital bed the whole time?
Yeah. The least amount of work. He's a fucking gem.
Great.
God.
He was so cool.
He was the coolest. Like, everyone that's listening to this, like, even the Bechdel cast girls, like, they can attest to this. Like, he's a genuine, the sweetest man. Like, the sweetest man I've ever met in my life. Like, what, that kind of person deserves fame.
Like, he's a good person. Yeah. I remember I was like, can you come to our podcast? Do you want me to email your reps? And he's like, no. Don't bother with them. Here's my number. Just text me. And I was like,
yeah,
you're so cool.
I love that.
Yeah.
He's just the coolest. The picture that I have, that we all have on that couch with him, I'm just so glad I looked good in that picture because I was so happy. And it's one of my favorite photos. It's so good. My friend made it the background of her phone, even though she has no connection to the pod or anything, but it's that good of a photo. Anyway, thank you for that wonderful review. I'm so glad you like the podcast. And I agree, it is one of the best podcast episodes ever recorded.
I agree as well. We're such crazy people. I agree, we have created the best.
All thanks to Alfred Molina, though. Yeah. Fred. He went by Fred.
Yeah, he went by Fred.
I forgot about that.
What an interesting man.
What an interesting, fascinating human.
I wish to be him. Mm-hmm. Is that weird?
No, I do too. It's fucking joy. Yeah. Do you want to read the next one?
Yeah, we haven't read this one before. I guess not.
I don't think so. It looks familiar, but I don't think we have read reviews for a while, for months.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Huh. And sorry if we read these again and you guys are like, wow, you're really indulging. What else do we have in life to do? Great podcast from Taylor Lover 911. From June 16, 2020. I first heard Anna and Shireen as guests on another podcast and immediately knew I had to subscribe. Ethnically Ambiguous quickly became a podcast staple in my life. Thank you for the insightful conversations that have taught me so much about the Middle East and the experience of people of color in the United States. I'm always looking forward to your next episode. Thank you, Taylor Lover 911.
Thank you.
That's so kind.
That is very kind. Yeah.
Taylor Lover. Thank you. Taylor Lover 911.
I'm not saying this to be repetitive, but I think this last one is the only one we haven't read. Because I think we did read Bridget's. Because I don't think we would set any reviews for at least two or three months, and this one was in June. So I'm going to read one more and then encourage you to leave your own review that we can read later. But this is from N. Bedlam. The subject heading is thank you. Again, we only read the five-star ones. This is a five-star review. They say, I really appreciate the discussions had on this podcast and the guests they have on. Oftentimes, I really wish I could have heard life stories like these when I was younger. Thank you, Shireen and Anna. Thank you for leaving us a five-star review and for supporting the show and for liking the show, because sometimes I forget that people like it. And it helps that it helps to remind myself that people like it and that there's a purpose for this show. So if you want us to read your review, you got to leave one. So go leave a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or your podcast app. You can even leave one on Facebook. You can rate us on Facebook and leave a review on our Facebook page. But keep it short and sweet. We can read it on the podcast. And it just really, it truly makes our day. I'm not kidding. When every time there's a nice review, like, we let the other person know. Like, that's how much it means to us. So thank you so much for everyone that leaves a review, for just even taking the time out of their day to write one. It means a lot.
Yes, it really does. So thank you to everyone who listens, to everyone who reaches out, tweets at us.
Mm-hmm. Replies to the Instagram stories.
Yeah.
We really are there. It's
Shout
only me and Anna.
To my dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Commenting, being like, ladies, very beautiful. Love it. Love that. If you guys could do more of that kind of like broken English that's comments.
Yeah, that's the vibe we're looking for.
You don't really have to. I was just joking. That's no, it is kind of my dad's brand. So please don't take his brand away.
That's all he has left. He's retired.
He commented on our Uyghur Muslims post. And can I actually pull it up? I want to read it because I rarely go on Facebook. I literally go on Facebook just to promote podcasts.
Oh, I didn't. I don't think I saw it. I mean, yeah, definitely. You have to read it.
It caught me off guard because I was like, dad? But he wrote, on Facebook, he commented, I think it was just on my post that I shared on my page.
Oh, I see.
He wrote, it is great. I'm proud of you guys. No matter what they believe or what kind of religious they have to treat as a human beings.
Yes.
Well, that's my dad correct. For you.
Wow. I love that so
it's
much.
It's simple. It's to the point. It's got some commas with too much spaces around them.
Of course.
Classic. Of course. Classic dad.
But, wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wow.
We did a great job.
Wait, can you write me your dad's first name?
Say. Well, it's Saifola, but we call
Saifola.
Him
Say. Saifola. Wow. What a man. What a review. That's great feedback, to be honest. Thank you. Oh, there's one more thing.
I like how you called it a review. It's just dad's Facebook comment.
But still, it's nice to get that kind of feedback.
Yeah.
The last thing I'll say before I fucking shut up. I don't know if you saw our post about it, but our TeePublic site, they're selling masks now. And you can get our logo on a mask. And because, again, we're very much still in a pandemic. And you should still be social distancing and wearing a mask. Even if your fucking county is loosening fucking lockdown procedures. Please don't go out to bars. Please don't go out to fucking brunch. It's not worth it. Please just continue practicing social distancing and trying to keep people out of hospitals.
Yeah.
So if you want to wear a mask with our fucking logo or faces even on it, go to TeePublic and look up our fucking store. Or it's either in one of our bios or you can find it anywhere. But yeah, we're selling masks now, which I think is pretty cool.
I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And wear a mask. I mean, like, what else is there to say?
You need to that's all you got to do. Wear a mask.
Protect yourself and others.
Yeah. That's the most basic human idea. But for some reason, it's now a political one. So protect yourself, protect others, wear a mask. And I think that's our show.
Thank you to everyone who listens. And what else is there to say?
And I don't know. I think especially now, it means a lot.
I was also going to say, go to our footnotes, donate to Lebanon. Don't forget to do that.
Anna compiled so many good resources. Shout out to you, Anna.
Shout out to me.
I can say it, not you.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. But there is a lot of places to donate to if you're able. And you can do your own research to see what place you trust the most to donate to. But the list that Anna compiled, they're There's just many. Trust the list.
There's many resources.
Yeah, a lot of good resources there too. And again, just stay informed. We're recording this on August 17th. Maybe things will be happening by the time we listen to this, but hopefully our episode gives you a little bit of history and a refresher on the turmoil that Lebanon has been facing for a while, and especially now. So thanks again for listening. I hope this helped. Okay, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen, it's Shirohiro on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter. We are always posting stuff on our Instagram and Twitter about global issues, Black Lives Matter. We've been posting a lot about Lebanon, we're posting a lot about Gaza, everything that's going on. Hopefully we can touch on what's going on in Gaza in a future episode. There's just so much to talk about. But until then, yeah, just stay tuned.
And you can follow me at Anna Hosnier. Will you bite that ass?
I will. Thank you. I'll bite that ass.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bizzle Fuma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.